Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. The imagery depicting our modern-day Halloween includes pumpkins, haunted houses, witches, and unusually thick spider webs draped across hedges. Halloween has roots in the Western Christian feast of All Hallows Day, dedicated to remembering the saints, martyrs, and faithful departed. But if you talk with someone who's had a ghostly or a paranormal experience, it likely didn't happen on or around Halloween, and it probably wasn't scary. Historian and author Tom Dresser spoke with a number of people with unexplained experiences across Martha's Vineyard. His latest book is Ghosts of Martha's Vineyard, and Tom Dresser joins us once again. Hello, Tom.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. So, Tom, you have looked at history of the island from many different perspectives: whaling, war, tourism, entertainment. What compelled you to focus in on ghosts?
Well, to be honest, it wasn't my idea. My publisher came to me a year ago, last October, and said, you know, ghosts are a big thing, and people are very interested in it. Would you look into it? And I had two reasons not to do it. First, that I didn't believe in ghosts. And second, that we have a woman on the vineyard, Holly Nadler, who's known as the Ghost Lady. She's written about ghosts. She's done ghost tours. She's all about ghosts. But the publisher persisted, and I gave up my resistance, and I met with Holly, and she passed the mantle over to me. So a year ago, I said I would start to look into it. And once I opened my eyes and my ears, things started to happen in a lot of different places around the vineyard, and it just became a fascinating topic, and the more I got into it, the more I wanted to find out more. So the result is the book Ghosts of Martha's Vineyard, which came out a month ago and is just perfect timing for Halloween.
Yeah. So, Tom, did you change your mind? You said you went into this not believing in ghosts. Have you changed your mind after writing this book?
Well, I have to say that I haven't gone at this as a scientist. I went at it more as a historian. And interviewing people really did change my mind. I believe that something happened to a number of people, and they tell me individual stories that they can repeat without exaggeration. They are consistent on something happened to them. And I believe them, so believe in ghosts by believing in them.
So one of the things, the takeaway from most of the stories in the book is that most people that you spoke with were not scared. You'd think, like, you see something unexplained, you'd be afraid. So how would you describe the emotions that they felt in the moments that they had these experiences?
Well, I don't think they were afraid. I think they were sort of intrigued, and they accept it. And a number of people who work at the News of America, which is a little pub at the Kelly House in Edgartown, they have consistent stories that are not frightening. They're a little off-putting, but they don't scare people. They just happen. Mm-hmm. And I've had a couple of experiences with this book, which you could say are sort of ghostly, or you can just attribute it to Mother Nature or whatever. But it's sort of looking at life a little bit differently, that we don't know everything that's out there. And so much of our world has changed. If you look back 200 years ago, there was no telephone. There was no automobile. There was no internet. All these things have come in the last 200 years. It makes sense to me to think that 200 years from now, there may be a greater understanding of the paranormal, about psychic intervention, about our soul, about our spirit. All of this is stuff that I think may be coming in the future. So I don't want to turn it off now.
Right. So often people had these experiences at night, a time when many of us feel more vulnerable because of the dark. But there are some other reasons why we might have these experiences at night. So explain.
Well, it's also a time of year that when there's less activity, it's a time of day where there's not a lot of interaction with other people. So it, night is sort of a more, if you look at it from the ghost perspective, it's a safer time to reveal yourself, and you can sort of individually meet whoever you're going to meet. But also, I mean, I'm very serious about the time of year that, like, we're a tourist community. These events don't usually happen in the summer. They happen in the off-season. They don't happen in the middle of the day when you're around a lot of other people. They're sort of at the end of the day when things are calming down and quiet and you're by yourself. And then something happens. And at night, but, it's just it's a perfect opportunity for a ghost to reveal itself.
And there were some instances, though, of people reporting this, you know, happening in the daytime as well. So it isn't strictly at night. Yeah, yeah. You talked with someone who has sort of a scientific explanation for ghosts, and it's rooted in physics. Tell us more about that.
Well, I actually met two people that I think have looked at this a little more seriously, and the one who comes across most directly is a clinician who has, over the course of 20 years, has seen a ghost or a figment of something in a sort of an unused room in a building. And she's, as a clinician, she wants to sort of understand who this person is, both their physical situation and their mental status. And she says that the person or the ghost is like a young man who's struggling with a project. And he may be autistic, he doesn't communicate, but he's very earnestly working on this project. So this the clinician thinks that there's sort of an energy that's left from the ghost when they were alive, and this energy is active when a clinician or a paranormal or one of us, the living, comes across this energy. She considers it like a fingerprint, that you can put your fingerprint down, you can't see it, but then if the ghost leaves some energy and the paranormal comes across it, then they see the ghost. So she's looking at it more as a scientific experience than just a blip in the night.
Mm. Yeah, saying that energy doesn't die, it just changes form, basically, right?
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, we read this in the newspaper yesterday about they found water on the moon, and it's not liquid, it's not solid. So what is it? Well, it must be, I mean, my wife says it's vicious. It's like gases. So maybe there's something there where the energy takes a different force from a ghost, and it sort of exists, but most people can't see it. I think you have to be a psychic or a paranormal, and you have to be a little bit susceptible to understanding or seeing or grasping something that's not there.
Or like you say, open to it, if you will. I remember asking my grandmother one time, I think I was a teenager, and I asked her if she believed in ghosts. And she laughed and she said, "Of course not. How could I live in this house all by myself if I believed in ghosts?" So she was definitely not open to that. Listeners, we're talking ghost stories. We're talking ghost stories in Halloween this hour. Have you had an encounter that raised the hair on your neck? And we also like to know how you're planning, if you're planning to celebrate Halloween. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. You start the book in Edgartown, and it's interesting to note that most of the buildings deemed haunted are historical buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, they have years of history to become a home for spirits from the unknown, and it's it's an opportunity for them to sort of preserve their existence. But, I just got going from one building to the next, and many of the experiences are not hundreds of years old. They're relatively recent. For example, at the Kelly House, there's the widow of a whale man, probably from the mid-1800s, and she is searching for her husband, waiting there for him. That's the assumption. And she stays in, or her room was 307 and 308 in the Kelly House. Well, a visitor came from off-island and stayed there in about 5 or 6 years ago, stayed in that room, and was visited by this ghost and was frightened by it, upset by it, but not to the point of screaming and ranting, but just didn't like it, like you would complain about bed bugs or something. You want to go to a different room. So management gave her a free meal and moved her to a different room. But the way I found out about it is a very modern way, that it came up on TripAdvisor, that don't get yourself booked at room 307 at the Kelly House because there's a ghost in there.
And actually, I bet that increases the traffic for that room, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, there's so many angles to it. The owner, former owner of the Daggett House, said that one of his employees used to say there were ghosts there just to increase business.
While we're on the Kelly House, tell us about some of the things that happen in the bar.
Yeah, the bar is fascinating. It's like an old English pub. It's called the News from America, and it was originally, they've got the date 1742. I don't think it goes back quite that far, but it's old. It's not dingy, but it's very close, and it feels like you're in an English pub when you're there. And I talked to a couple of bartenders who talked about the lights in the bar. They sometimes flicker on and then flicker off, and nobody can figure out whether it's a loose bulb or a poor connection, but they don't worry about it. It just happens. But a kind of shocking thing was that one time a couple of wine glasses jumped off the shelf and propelled like 8 feet out over the bar and crashed on the floor. And this bartender said he was there, he saw it, he had to clean up the mess, but it was like, why did this happen? The shelf was level, there was no big movement that forced them. They just happened. And then I talked to somebody else who had experienced the same thing at a different time. So it's like this is something, some sort of activity there. Then around Christmas, there was an ornament on a wreath that fell off and hit the floor and rolled across the floor and then bounced back like somebody had shot it right across the room. And then several times the fire in the fireplace dies out and it's getting close to closing time, and the bartender will go over to make sure the fire is just about out, and it flares back and burns for quite a bit more. It's like somebody wants the fire to keep going, doesn't want the evening to end. And so they think there's a spirit around there. And then I met the woman who had met the ghost herself. And we're sitting at the bar there, and she was as straightforward and serious as she could be. She said that the ghost, who they call Helen, was seen. She saw her right standing by the fireplace and just sort of standing there, wispy white hair, dressed in 19th century clothes, and then she just sort of faded away. And again, it was at night. It was sort of the end of the evening. And it was a unreal experience. And yet the woman who told me the story said she wasn't frightened. She was almost comforted by it. It was like a spirit was there to comfort her.
Interesting. So, let's talk to Tessa, who's giving us a call from Wellfleet. Hi, Tessa.
Hello. Nice to speak Hi. To both of you. I love these stories, and I have to hunt down the book.
Well,
so
yeah.
Just one thing I wanted to add is, in my lifetime and talking to a lot of people in my community, I found that it's not just psychics or paranormal who have these interactions, but it's people who have deceased people in their family who are having some contact with their family. Mm-hmm. And in that way, I think it's a lot more common than it might otherwise be. And because it is family members, it's maybe more of a vulnerable conversation for people to have. But I think it happens in that way fairly often.
Yeah. Tessa, it's a good point. You know, I have to say I've never seen a ghost, but I sometimes have dreams of departed family members, and usually giving some kind of message that I think, were they here in real life, that's probably the advice they would be giving, right? And you wonder, why did I have that dream?
I've had that with my grandma several times. The same grandma has visited other family members, especially after they have a baby or something.
Yeah. Tessa, thanks for the call and sharing that with us. We've got a note from Henry who says, last Halloween we saw a performance of Frank DeBoss' The Chatham Ghost at Kate Gould Park. Richard Wilbur narrated, complete with sound effects. Does anyone know if the work will be performed this year? Good question, Henry. I don't know, but maybe somebody listening does. If you do, give us a call, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking ghost stories and Halloween this hour with Tom Dresser. His new book is Ghosts of Martha's Vineyard. Do you have a ghost story to share? Give us a call or let us know what you've planned for Halloween during the pandemic. Will you be out trick-or-treating or handing out candy this year? 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Genevieve writes, she wanted a fact correction, Tom. She says, the Kelly House and the News were built in the mid-1970s.
1970s.
That's what she says here. Yeah. So we might want to check that out. And then Molly writes, if I ever saw a ghost, I would not necessarily be afraid. Why should we assume that all spirits are a threat? I keep my mind open to other possibilities. Perhaps it's just a restless soul in need of peace or closure. Agree. I think maybe it's those scary movies that get us a little worried about what the experience will be like. Tom, I do have a story to tell. And with two possible conclusions at the end, my mother collected music boxes, and she had them lined up under this row of windows in her bedroom. And after she died, my siblings and I were there in the house, and all of a sudden, the shade flew up, and the music box that didn't work started to play. Just for, you know, a brief little bit. So my sister, of course, and he said, oh, it's mom. She's trying to contact us. And now if you just had that set of facts, you would say, wow, that's a kind of ghostly encounter. But I said, do you think maybe the train that just went by less than a mile away and the vibration from the train may have snapped that shade and got that overwound music box to play? Two possibilities, right?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, I just don't know. But...
So part of it is believing, you know, like your sister, believing that your mother is trying to contact you. And
right.
Part of it is the scientific thing that there's a logical explanation for it. And
right.
That's where we as a people are sort of torn because we're not really sure. Was it the train vibrating the window shade that rocked the music box, or is that how extra personal people connect with you? I mean, that's the question,
It didn't happen again. It only happened that one time, and it could be anything. Just want to say, Dan did look up, the Kelly House was built in 1742, according to what Dan was just looking up. So
The
jailhouse is also known to be haunted by Old Joe. Who was Old Joe, and what was he up to at the jailhouse?
Okay, the Dukes County House of Correction, which does also date from the mid-1800s, has been a jail for a century and a half, and it was in around 1950 that this inmate supposedly hanged himself, and his name was Joe, and that was the sort of background behind it. But in the early 1990s, there was a flurry of ghost activities at the jail that the officers there reported. And it was in the newspaper, and I just followed up with the reporter and the newspaper. And I tried to verify things in the present day, and I didn't get very far. But the story is that in 1990 or so, three or four of the officers who were in charge at the jail each had a bit of a story that related to Old Joe. And everything, like you said earlier, everything seemed to happen at night when there was less activity and it was a little bit spooky. But there'd be an officer sitting at a desk doing paperwork, and he'd hear footsteps of a fellow officer coming toward him, turn around to see him, and there was nobody there. And that sort of spooked him out. And then somebody else reported that the water in the sink just all of a sudden turned on and then turned off. And another time there was some flickering of the lights that went on and off. And someone heard a typewriter going in the middle of the night, and it was just going and going and going, and they investigated, and there was nobody there. And then the final straw was that there was a like a camera that would see if any of the inmates were out of their cells, and an officer was watching the screen and saw an image of somebody walking across it. And they investigated the site of where this camera had been taken, and all the inmates were in their cells, and they couldn't figure out what happened. So there were like four or five different instances of strange sounds, strange sightings, and no explanation of who or what caused it. And the upshot was that they blamed it on Old Joe. They said this inmate who hanged himself years ago has come back to sort of either communicate with them, scare them, or maybe just socialize with them. I mean, there's so many other elements to this that some people think that ghosts are people whose lives were interrupted tragically, and the ghost doesn't know whether they're alive or dead. Now, if you kill yourself, that could be an unexpected situation that you didn't expect, and so you feel like you're still not sure whether you're alive or dead, and you're still acting things out. So maybe Old Joe is really a ghost trying to figure out where he belongs.
We're talking ghost stories and Halloween this hour. Tom Dresser's new book is Ghosts of Martha's Vineyard. If you have a ghost story to share, give us a call, 866-999-4626, or let us know what you have planned for Halloween, if you're going to be out trick-or-treating or handing out candy, or you're just going to pass this year. 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Atria is a restaurant in Edgartown, and you talked with one of the owners, Greer. Tell us what was happening in that building.
Okay, which place is it? The
Atria.
Restaurant?
Yeah, Atria and Greer.
Oh, Atria, yes. Yeah. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
The way these ghost stories came to me is so random, because it's sort of word of mouth. It's like an undercurrent that how do you hear these things? Well, last year, I was going to the Y exercising, and a body pump class, weightlifting and stuff. And a woman came to me who had been in the class several times. She knew who I was, but we weren't close friends. And she said, I heard you're writing about ghosts and or looking into ghost stories. And she said she ran the Atria restaurant right on Main Street. And she and her husband bought the place about 20 years ago. And she had three specific experiences that she wanted to share with me. And she was very straightforward. She had it in her head what the three things were. There was no hesitation. These things had happened to her. The first one happened shortly after they bought the restaurant around 2000, 2001. And she was at the front desk late at night, nobody else in the building. She was just doing paperwork or something. And she heard her name spoken very clearly right next to her. And she said it was a very eerie feeling, and yet it was comforting because she had a feeling that whoever was speaking to her was kind of welcoming her as the owner of the restaurant. So that was sort of a comforting experience. Then about 5 or 6 years later, she had to go into the building. It was in the off season, and so the restaurant was closed. And she brought her two dogs, and they walked into the restaurant, and she told me she had to get something out of the kitchen. She walked toward the kitchen, and the dogs refused to go with her. They both paused and looked up at the ceiling and just refused to move. And she kept going. She opened the door to the kitchen, and she was greeted with this a lot of screaming and loud sounds. People's voices were just overwhelming. And she dashed in, got what she wanted, closed the door, and got out of there with her dogs. And the way she interpreted it was that the spirits were unhappy that the restaurant was closed in the off season. And she sort of took that as the meaning of why she got screamed at by all these strange sounds that she couldn't attribute to a person, but they were sounds.
I think what's interesting there is the reaction of the dogs, because how many times have, you know, for pet owners, right, you go, what are they looking at?
Right. It's so weird. There's several stories of dogs that are looking up at ceilings or growling, but we know that dogs can hear things that we can't hear. So, right, you know, the dogs may have heard the sound.
Then right, and said, yep,
don't
go in.
The incident that happened at Atria was that this was 2 years ago, that she was in the building, I think by herself upstairs, and she looked down and saw somebody walking along the hallway downstairs. The building was locked up, it was tight, it was closed, and who was this person? And I asked if it was a man or a woman. She said it was indefinable. She didn't know, and the person just sort of walked past and then disappeared. Hmm. So she was very clear in those three experiences, and I was captured by her sincerity and her belief. It's not like she was pulling chains,
right,
or anything.
Yeah.
It was like, this has happened and I'm accepting it. I go on with my life. I'm not making a big deal about it, but I want you to know it happened.
Yeah, wow. Let's talk to Susan, Susan's giving us a call. She's formerly of Edgartown. Hi, Susan.
Oh, hi, Mindy. I'm so honored to talk to you. I used to live in Edgartown. Am I here?
Yeah, go ahead.
I used to live in Edgartown, and I worked at a bank right in the center of Edgartown, and I worked for a woman who worked there. And one day she asked me, she owned a house down North Water Street, and with the water across the street, you know, and she asked me to run back to her house and pick up her lunch, which she had left on the kitchen island. It was a big island, a big kitchen, big old house, and an old sea captain's house. And I walked in, walked through to the kitchen, and as soon as I entered the kitchen, I saw a ghost. I saw a woman, middle-aged. She had an old-fashioned bonnet on, and she had a long dress to the floor. The sleeves were poofy at the top. You know, I know there's a name for that, but and an apron, a long apron. And she wasn't looking at me, really. And where she was standing was between a staircase and the kitchen fireplace. And I had the feeling she was going to run up the stairs, but she didn't. She just stood there. And I had the sense that she was animate, you know, that it wasn't, that it was a ghost. And the ghost was aware of my presence, and I respected her presence. So I just got the sandwich, and I went back to work. And the story's not over yet. I brought the sandwich to my friend, and I said, here's your lunch. And I walked away, and I thought for a moment, and I said, I turned back, and I said, you know, in the kitchen there, I thought I saw, and she gasped, grabbed her, you know, covered her mouth in exclamation. She said, you saw it? And I said, yes, I saw a ghost. And I described it, and she said, yes, we know all about the ghost. We were living there, and the kids, she had adult kids at the time, and they all knew about the ghost.
Wow.
And it was just amazing to me, you know, that I was so, you know, I've always felt kind of in touch with the other world, whatever it is. And I wasn't surprised or shocked or afraid. It was just like you're saying, it was just matter of fact, there's a ghost. And she kind of disappeared from view. She kind of dissolved, I guess you'd say, out of my sight. Because I did have the sense I could contact, you know, I could talk to her, but then I realized she didn't want to. She kind of dissolved, and I turned my heels and I ran back to the bank. So,
Susan, thanks for sharing. Thanks for sharing that story. That's one, Tom, you missed that one for the book, didn't you?
I know. Well, that's the thing, that once these stories start to circulate, it brings out other experiences. And I was just so, I'm so impressed that she, you know, this person who just called had such specific description of things and was not afraid.
Yeah, it seemed like something you wouldn't forget. Yeah.
The best part of this whole thing is that it's not like a scary situation.
Right.
It's a matter of fact thing. I mean, it's very, very intriguing.
Yeah. Susan, thanks for the call. Jeff is giving us a call from Marston's Mills. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. Yeah. I had my experience was frightening. I'm an artist, and I was painting scenery for Little Abner in the Highfield Theater over in Falmouth. And it was one of those last-minute things that, you know, we were going up the next day, so I had to get it done. I'm there very late. It was getting on for midnight. People had promised to come and help, and nobody had turned up. Suddenly, there was a banging on all of the exits in turn, as though someone were thumping on the side of the building. It went around four times. And then the lights in the men's dressing room over on stage right started to flash on and off. And it really scared me. I couldn't leave. I felt like leaving, but I turned up the radio and just kept on painting. And I learned later that someone called Faye, I think, had hanged herself in the scenery dock sometime in the past. I never found out quite when, because her family refused to let her marry someone that was involved with the theater. But pretty scary.
Yeah, sounds it. Yeah, Jeff, thanks for sharing. Thanks for the call. Well, I've heard stories about Highfield having a ghost, so thanks for sharing that. Ellen sent us a note. She said, we had a haunted house in Eastham built in 1720, the Crosby Tavern on Bridge Road. Shouldn't share any details, though, so we don't know what happened there. But Ellen, thanks for that. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandisland.org. We'll talk more after break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking ghost stories and Halloween this hour with Tom Dresser. His latest book is Ghosts of Martha's Vineyard. If you have a ghost story to share, give us a call and let us know what you're doing for Halloween. Are you planning to hand out candy? And if so, are you finding a physically distanced way to pass out the treats? Share your story. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Tom, did you stumble across any ghost stories associated with cemeteries on the island?
It's interesting you ask. I don't have specific ghost stories about anyone who's buried in the cemetery, but I've done two ghost stories. I have one quick ghost story about a cemetery that was this was reported in the Boston Globe in 1939, so a few years ago, and it was two women in West Tisbury who were at the Rogers Path Cemetery in West Tisbury, and they reported that there was a very bright white light that appeared over the graves, and it was so bright they could read the writing on the gravestones. And the light lasted for several minutes, and the women were absolutely sure that there was something there, but they couldn't explain where it came from. They couldn't explain why it was there. And they reported it to other people in West Tisbury, and eventually it made its way to the Boston Globe. So that was a ghost story that happened in a cemetery. Now, to go back to where I am today, I was asked like 3 years ago to do a tour of a cemetery here in Oak Bluffs. And I've done these tours for 2 or 3 years. And then this autumn, I was filmed doing a ghost story associated with that local cemetery. So I talked about a dozen graves, and then I added in ghost stories that had nothing to do with the cemetery, but mm-hmm. they just fit in. And that was through the Oak Bluffs Library. Now, I have a second one where I was asked to do a tour of Abel's Hill Cemetery. And this one is not anything to do with ghosts, but it is being aired tonight through the Chilmark Library. And it's a virtual walking tour of Abel's Hill. And I stop at about a dozen different graves and talk for a minute or two about the different people there. And just a couple of them are general knowledge. One is Lillian Hellman, who wrote Toys in the Attic and The Children's Hour, and she's buried at Abel's Hill. And another one who is very well known was John Belushi, is buried there, the man from Animal House and the Blues Brothers and Saturday Night Live. So that is being aired tonight. It's a Zoom program. It's a 20-minute video, and then I talk about the graves. It relates to Halloween, and it relates to people who have passed on and spirits and all, but it doesn't specifically have ghost stories in it.
Let's talk to Kathleen, who's calling from West Tisbury. Hi, Kathleen.
Yes, it's West Tisbury. I mean, it's Chilmark Library. And there's
Kathleen
a
from,
link yeah, if you go yeah, to the okay. Chilmark Library. It's
yep. All right, hang on, Tom. We're talking to Kathleen from West Tisbury. Hi, Kathleen. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? Thanks
Good.
For taking my call.
Sure.
So I have a story about the first time I ever saw a ghost. Right now I live in West Tisbury, and I live on 300-year-old family land. And so the people that have lived here have been here for a long time. And sometime in 1999, my ex-husband's grandfather had passed away on this land. And a year later to the day, I was sitting in my bedroom and I was reading a story, and there was no one else in the house. and I was looking, you know, at the pages where the all of the words are, but in the periphery, I could see all of a sudden a man just showed up at the foot of my bed. And it was totally looked like my ex-husband's grandfather. He had the same smile, the same suspenders, the same hat. And he was furiously waving with a big smile, like saying, hi. And
well, that's what you want to see, right?
I know. It was exactly a year to the date from when he passed away, because he passed away on New Year's Eve in 1999. So exactly a year later, he sort of showed up at the foot of my bed, and I had never had an experience like that before. And I remember I took my book and I just kind of went whoop and like put it up over my eyes because I wasn't really sure what I saw. But also what had happened around that time is, like I had heard earlier, you're saying about how animals sort of make funny faces. The grandfather, his name was Chester, had also had a dog that he loved and brought with him everywhere. And I would have moments where I'd be sitting on the couch and the door would open by itself. And my cat was sitting next to me and my cat was scanning something as if it had walked in the door and made that big, like, arched its back and kind of hissed, like, who the heck are you coming into this house? And was scanning with his eyes and then kind of scanned all the way back out as if something had walked in the house and then walked out. And stuff like that certainly happens a lot on the vineyard.
Yeah, Kathleen, thank you for sharing.
I've never had an experience like that.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. Well, at least it was a happy one. Waving is a good sign. Speaking of animals, Pam from Nantucket sent a note saying, we're enjoying the program this morning. Our dogs will not walk past the Hedwin House on Main Street and Pleasant Street in Nantucket. Our dog walks when we get to that corner. Our dog wants to cross the street to the other side. Our mini schnauzer Treble followed this pattern for years, and now his replacement, a mini schnauzer named Scuppers, does the same. When on a tour of the house, I mentioned this to the docent, who replied that indeed she believes the house is haunted. She proceeded to tell us about various ghostly happenings at the house. Who knows? Makes for great stories. Thanks for sharing, Pam. Mort is calling from Truro. Hi, Mort.
Good morning. There is no question there are ghosts. I am an old reporter, and despite what the president and others says, I am not used to telling fake news. I get a real ghost story. I lived in an old sawmill in Ridgefield, Connecticut, just a few years ago, and it had been operating as a sawmill in the year 1716. We used to hear all sorts of strange sounds and creaks during the night, but I always thought that just had something to do with the old beams or changing position. Mm-hmm. I came home one night after working late in New York City. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and the week before, my son, who had been there by himself, my wife and I were out of town, had said there was something crazy going on in the house over two nights. He had heard voices, sounded like people calling for help, and he said he just got out, got into his car, and left for a couple of hours. Well, I came home, and my wife met me at the back door and said, "Your son was right. There are ghosts. There are ghosts." And I said, "What are you talking about?" She said, "I'm telling you, there are ghosts." I said, "Come on, walk me into the house." And she said, "I heard them. I heard them." And I said, "That's crazy. There are no ghosts. I mean, that's just absolutely, it's probably some animals down in the old sawmill part of the house." And just as I said that and repeated, "There are no ghosts. There are just no ghosts," I stopped talking. And I looked up just over her head, and she stared at me, and she said, "You're white. What happened?" And my eyes had popped open wide, and I couldn't talk. And I said, "Did you put a piece of paper up on the armoire in the room behind you?" And she said, "What are you talking about?" What had happened was, as I was saying for the third time, there are no ghosts. Believe me, there are no ghosts. A sheet of paper wafted up from the top of the armoire, I don't know how it got there, and just floated down to the floor. I walked by her, picked up the paper, then immediately went to see if windows were open, was the door open, were there breezes? But no, there was no question, it was a ghost. And if I could just add something to prove this, 2 days later, I was at the Ridgefield Hardware store, and was telling the story, and there were a couple of people around, and they thought I had too much to drink that night, I guess, and they laughed. And one woman listening nearby said, "No, there are ghosts, and they're in this town." She told a story about her home, which was just up the street on Main Street. She and her husband wanted to get their floors in this old house sanded and redone. And she said for some reason the three people that she tried to hire said they didn't want to touch those floors. They were beautiful old, made of beautiful old beams, and they just wouldn't do it. Finally, she got somebody to do it. The night when that job was finished, she and her husband were in their bedroom upstairs, and they both heard a noise and were awakened. And the husband said, "There's somebody downstairs." And he had a pistol in his cabinet nearby, near the bed. And he said, "I'll go down. You stay here. Be careful. And if I call out, call the police." He went down and he called her and said, "There's no problem. You can come down." Well, the floors were still a bit tacky, so they didn't walk through that room that had been redone. But the next couple of hours passed. They had had some coffee and were thinking about going back to bed. And she went down to take another look with a flashlight, and there were footmarks, probably made by an old, large boot that had walked
Yeah, wow. All right, Mort, you're good with the stories. You should be doing a program on that. Mort, thanks for sharing. I want to try to fit Neil in real quick. Neil's calling from Truro. We got just a couple minutes, Neil.
Hi, this is Nell, and I
Oh, Nell, I'm sorry.
In Truro, and it's okay, honey. No problem.
Okay.
But this, I will be quick. I live in a little cottage on the bay, and I came home from work one day, and as was my habit, I got out of the car and I walked down to the water. And I was standing on the seawall and I was looking, and my neighbor was standing on the beach and he had a golden retriever beside him. And I thought, oh, that's great. Barry got a new dog, because Bailey had died several years before. And he was waving, and Bailey's tail, or the dog's tail, was waving back and forth. And I thought, that's really cool. And I, you know, waved and turned around and went back in the house, went outside, got a lawnmower out, and I noticed there was an ambulance down the beach, and I didn't know what had happened. So scarily enough, when I found out, Barry had died 3 hours earlier, right out in front. His kayak turned over, but I will swear till the day I die, that man was standing on the beach with his dog. And
wow, you gave me goosebumps now.
So,
yeah, wow.
What? This was 2 years ago.
Nell, thank you.
Barry and his dog were happy together.
Yeah, well, that's at least a nice thought that they're happy together. Thank you for sharing. Some great stories. Tom Dresser's new book, Ghosts of Martha's Vineyard. Tom, thanks for sharing and getting us thinking about ghosts this morning. And, you know, enjoy Halloween weekend.
Thank you.
We'll have more information about Tom's book at our website, capeandislands.org. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.